I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Bills news with a UK twist. We're deep 1 week into training camp. This time it's Robin and myself, Matt, talking all things Bills. And Robin, this week's been very interesting.
Very interesting.
The pads
came on, and we all know what that means.
Yes, Josh Allen getting hurt twice.
Yes, and we have to properly evaluate the offensive line. So everything I said last week can be thrown out of the window. Because as many people have said, it's offensive line in particular is meaningless until the pads come on. Another week closer, 1 week from preseason game. We've had one Hall of Fame game already. So those little milestones are all getting knocked down bit by bit. I watched the, obviously for UK fans, obviously I know a lot of people subscribe to NFL Game Pass. For anyone who's interested, it's now taken over by DAZN. So there's an awful lot of fun with people moving their subscriptions and getting cancelled, but getting charged and then getting charged twice and then getting charged and da-da-da. And like every single time they advertise these things months out. And I had a reminder like every week saying, by the way, we're moving. And in my case, they took the money on about the second or third of the month and it was absolutely fine. So I have nothing to complain about. So there's one data point for you. But I know a lot of people had an awful lot of problems getting their $151.99 or whatever it is taken out of the account. But to answer your question, there's a bit of fun trying to switch like the video types and stuff, because it used to be on Game Pass you could just click on it and then you'd choose which one you wanted to see. Do you want to just see the highlights? Do you want to see the full game? Or do you want to see what they used to call Game in 40? I think they still do have Game in 40, but maybe because it was the Hall of Fame game or maybe they're working out the kinks, it was more like a Game in 20. So they seem to cut out the puns, the punts and the first downs. So it would jump a little brutally. Now maybe they're trying it out and they're obviously getting used to editing it. So it may be one to keep an eye on. But apart from that, the coverage of via DAZN was I don't know if I'm saying it right. Is it Dasna?
Dasna.
Apart from that, the coverage was good. I remember Game Pass, when we first got it, you used to jump horribly. Like the streaming quality was bad. It wasn't, you kept rebooting your router and stuff. That seems to be pretty good. And I think it's going to be a lot easier for people who watch on smart TVs, because Game Pass was only available on certain smart TVs, because I had it on one of my TVs in my house, but it's not available as an app on another and that kind of thing. I think Dasna is a lot more universal. So that should... long term, once they work out all the kinks, and hopefully three preseason games, a week one kickoff, Chiefs Lions. By the time we get to Bills Jets, hopefully it should be humming.
So you recommend it?
I didn't actually talk about the game, did I? I just spent the whole 2 minutes talking about Dasna. No shit. Anyway, I mean, it's pretty. I mean, it's preseason. If you're a Browns fan. If you're a Jets fan, you're gonna be interested in watching your team play. But it was all a bit of a, it's like a community shield game or charity shield, isn't it? It's just a bit of a kickabout. It's just nice to see your team play, I suppose.
Resting all their starters. Yeah. It's pretty much a fourth preseason game.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
They get most of the second and third string guys, and guys are on the bubble that will start.
It's a bubble game, isn't it? It's for guys. Yeah. We all know. I mean, if you got, 53, you've probably got 40 to 45 are pretty much written in pen. It's the chance for those final guys. And also for those guys to put themselves in the shop window. So if they're going to make that team, they may be appealing to another team.
Yeah.
Who knows? We might be in the market for a right tackle. So, let's see. Let's see what
market
happens.
Market for a lot of positions, judging by
Bills,
especially on this O-line. And
well, okay.
when we recorded this yesterday.
We are recording it now.
Yeah, we're recording this on Saturday, but Friday,
yes,
they had the red white, the red return of the red and white, red and blue scrimmage.
Oh, the scrimmage, yeah, at Highmark Stadium, wasn't it?
And I'm hearing that it was more of a defensive game or defensive win rather than an offensive, an offensive win. I think Josh Allen went like for 1 in 5 or something, like for 5 yards.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was too...
I don't think they had a drive that went past midfield. So it was pretty bad. Now I used to do a fair bit of AmDram in years past, and they always used to have a saying that if you have a bad dress rehearsal, then that meant you were going to have a good week in the production, and the dress rehearsal was the chance to get your mistakes out. It wasn't true, by the way. If you had a bad dress rehearsal, it usually meant you were pretty bad and the player was going to be shit. And if you had a good dress rehearsal, it probably meant you were going to be pretty good and you're probably going to have a pretty good week. So it's one of those things people say to try and cheer you up if you've had a bad time of it. There's a certain grain of truth in that you're then sharper and edgier because you're so worried about making a mistake. So you go out there. So it's nothing to worry about. But it is interesting that the O-line, as soon as the pads came on and it started to count, an awful lot of weaknesses started emerging.
Well, we kind of see from camp that there is at least four that's set in stone, which is Dawkins, Connor McGovern, Mitch Morse, and Spencer Brown.
Yeah.
Obviously, the interesting one's right guard, where it's been rotated between Bates and Torrance.
Yeah.
Mainly, the only time Torrance has become right guard is when they've actually made Bates second team center. Because
yes,
I have a feeling the fact they've given him loads of center reps that he's going to be the backup center for this team.
Yeah,
and that kind of means that Torrance has got something in for his own. And he's held his own a couple of times I've seen in training camp. He's been holding his own, and could actually overtake Bates, and they'll focus Bates on being a centre. But
do you want to make a prediction? Do you think Torrance starts against the Jets week one? The right guard, the naturally kind of small C conservative McDermott doesn't like to play rookies. Do you think he puts Torrance for week one against Aaron Rodgers? I mean, he won't be playing against Aaron Rodgers, but you know what I mean.
Wow, man, it's difficult. My heart wants to say yes, but then you're looking at it. I mean, who's our week two game against again? It was
Washington, isn't it? Washington and the Raiders. No, it's Raiders, then Washington, isn't it?
I would say that Torrance would be starting by week two. I think they'll give. I just think because of that D line of the Jets. As much as I want him to put Torrance in, and he's held his own. He's held his own against Oliver, against that defensive line in training camp. But I just feel the first game. It's a pressure. It's a Monday night football. You're facing a strong Jets defensive line.
Yeah, very
might
good.
Might be a bit too soon. But I think within the first month of that season, he'll be your starting guard.
Okay. Yeah. I can't see him starting week one. I agree with you. I think they go with what you know. And I think it's the pressure for a rookie mistake, certainly in a week one game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would be inclined to, and I think they will. I mean, I would have no problem if they started Torrance, but I think they will play it safe and start Bates.
To be honest, I can only see on this offense, I can only see one rookie starting. I mean, across the whole offense. I mean, you might even extend that to the defense. I can only see one rookie actually starting that first game.
Big D. Special K.
Big D.
K-pop.
DK. Not DK Metcalf.
The Metcalf. Yeah.
Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah.
I think
it's going to be hard to keep him out, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, before we'll go on to that in a minute, because there's quite a lot to say. He's actually been very impressive at camp. I know Mark wanted to talk about the tackle position. So if we stay on the offensive line, the tackle position, I mean, what was it? Thursday, Spencer Brown went out with a lower back injury. He came back.
Yeah. But played yesterday.
And then obviously you're hearing people coming out on online about Deion Dawkins having a shocker. It's gotta be an area of concern. I know training camp with the pads on, they need to adjust a little bit more, but it is a little bit of a concern, especially when there's still a question mark on the right guard. And when you've got Quisenberry, who, if he has to come in, would be more of a right tackle than a left tackle, and Brandon Schell, who hasn't been the best tackle in the league, you're seriously now worrying about that depth at tackle. And if Dawkins goes down and Spencer Brown's out, then Josh is going to be scrambling for the love of God with him, and we won't be able to get a rhythm sorted. So, to you, does that tackle position really feel vulnerable? Put it that way.
Yes. They don't have much behind Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown, and if those two aren't even playing that well, then we really are in trouble. Now, again, we are a month away. Pre-season will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see who gets reps. I mean, I wouldn't have thought Josh will play much more than he'll maybe do one possession, maybe in the first quarter, and he'll maybe, because it's hard to get him off the field. He may play the first quarter, which is more than a lot of people play pre-season. But yeah, it is a worry, isn't it? Dawkins, what I've heard, obviously you have to filter it through everyone's sort of subjective kind of things, because I've seen people saying that the O-line's not as bad as people say. We're just coming up against what is possibly the best Bills D-line and pass rush that we've had probably under the McDermott era, shall we say. Maybe they are going to buckle a little bit, but then, you know, metal sharpens metal and all of that good stuff. Maybe that's, they've got a month now to figure things out. And obviously the D-line are probably going to help them as well, going, did you see how I beat you just then? Here's how maybe you saw me and that sort of thing. So probably your best teachers are your D-line and edge. That being said, Deion Dawkins didn't have a very good season last year. He wasn't bad. It wasn't awful.
No.
He didn't make a lot of waves. He was solid and dependable, but he wasn't at his best. And you hope that maybe he could bounce back. I hope we're not saying that we've seen the best of him and that this is it. We hope that maybe he can come back. I mean, when I saw that thing with Spencer Brown, I really winced, because as someone who's had sort of back trouble for years, that thing of not being able to take your shoes off really sort of hit home to me, because that's really bad. That's really lower back, right at the base of the line. That's horrible, because if you do have that, he's had, I think, two lots of spinal surgeries, hasn't he, in two seasons?
It's
twinge. Now, again, I've had twinges and I've had that sort of thing, and I am quite some way off being a professional athlete. And let's be honest, at 47, time is running out for me to become a professional athlete. So I know that sensation, and it can pass. And with good medical and, you know, with good treatment and good rehab, he was back the next day. He's back in the team again. It's maybe not a huge thing to worry about. But yeah, you have to wonder if the optimism that I'm holding on to is that the team, that McDermott and Bean, love Spencer Brown, and that they're pulling for him to come through. And if he can work through the twinges, he's okay. But yeah, it wouldn't hurt to bring someone else in behind him just in case.
I think it's been proven. He's no one else up until he went out in that on Thursday. No one else has been getting a look in at that right tackle spot. It's been all Spencer Brown for it. And he has been working really closely with Aaron Cromer on trying to fix everything. So it definitely is a make or break season for him. I think with Dawkins, you get what you get with him. I think he's going to be fine regardless of if he's had times where he's whiffed a little bit and all that. It's just probably just a case that obviously the offense are trying newer personnel, newer plays. Yep. Whereas defense, they are fresh. They've got the momentum. They know what plays they're going to run. And I'm just looking at all the available free agent tackles that, yep, if they've decided after the next month or so, or during the next couple of weeks, especially after that first preseason game, if they feel like they need to get another tackle in. I mean, yeah, you've got the likes of Taylor Lewan, Eric Fisher, Joe Haig, Jawan James, Jason Peters. He's still doing well for 41.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, or not bad.
Tyan Seki.
Yeah.
He did well for us. But then one name that I circle back to, the one that all Bills fans will love to have re-sign, Mr. Bobby Hart. Get him back.
Oh, Bobby. You can't keep him down, can you?
No, but
he's still got his locker there as well.
I think that is going to be interesting. I mean, there's also you could see a trade being swung. The fact that it's to the last week after the last preseason game to actually get down from 53 from 90 to 53. So there's one cutoff.
Yeah, there's not. It's not
staggered.
Blended, is it? You just go from 90 to 53 in one fell swoop, don't you?
You could see Brandon Bean maybe make a trade. Maybe there's one guy on that roster which you think he's good, but he's not going to make our 53, and he may get pinched off the practice squad. They might trade him and maybe a fourth to seventh round pick.
Yeah,
to trade for a serviceable tackle.
Yeah,
to come in and compete is an option on there, but
it's not bad. Or let me sweeten that pot. Maybe we're pretty deep on corner. Not all the linebackers are going to make it. We've got good cornerbacks, but do we need all of them? I mean, I know we've got four pretty good. Corner, but I'll try plus three more. Maybe you could afford to let one go.
Yeah, I think the
maybe
other one,
Dane Jackson, maybe or one of the linebackers. Well, we were talking offense, weren't
probably
we?
Not. But, yeah,
but that's not a bad idea to get a tackle in. Maybe get a swing tackle in for a bit of cover.
You're looking at next year. If you're going to look for a trade, for a tackle, obviously you may want to look at someone that's going to go into that's in their contract year, so you get them for a little bit cheaper in the trade value. Some of the guys that are going to be out of contract to the end of next season, you've got Trenton Brown of the Patriots, you've got Jonah Williams, Cincinnati, Terrence Steele of the Cowboys, Britt Jermaine Illuminor of the Raiders, Isaiah Wynn. That's pretty much some of the bigger names on there. So maybe it's worth chucking a sixth or seventh, and maybe a pick, and maybe a player for one of those to come in. Or if there is a guy that could be struggling, chuck a sixth or a seventh. And if they don't, like say next week or something like that, or the week or after the Colts game, chuck that. If they don't make it, then it's only a sixth or seventh pick. How many sixth and seventh round picks recently for the Bills have actually started and actually had a long mainstay on this team? Because we've got rid of Rashard Wildgoose and another sixth or seventh round picks in the last few years. Without even playing game, they just shipped him off or released him.
Yeah.
So if there is someone where that's either coming to the end of their contract or they're struggling and they think they're not going to make it, just phone them up, say that we'll give you this for him. and just cut your losses at the end of a cut down if it does happen.
Mm.
It's an option, especially.
Yeah, probably going to have to play out the Spencer Brown thing. Let's hope Dion can, you know, turn it up a bit in the month of August. But I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Bean's making a few calls through August just to see who might be interested. You never know what might happen, because it is a bit of a worry, isn't it? Even if Spencer Brown and Dion Dawkins work out, there's not much behind them. They've done a lot to solidify the centre of that offensive line, the internal offensive line, but on the outside of that offensive line, yeah, one goes, you've got a direct access to our quarterback, haven't you?
Yeah,
there's a bit of a worry.
It's definitely one to watch for this training camp. I mean, we did say before training camp that we weren't that worried about the O-line. There's going to be battles in there, which we're seeing with Bates and Torrance as a way, but we know now the reason why Torrance is getting a little more look-ins, because Bates is actually being prepped for the centre role or the backup centre.
The next
position is really we'll go to tight end on this one.
Okay.
And obviously Dalton Kincaid, was it Mark or yourself that last week said that he would be a potential for offensive rookie of the year?
I think it was probably Mark, because I think he was still cashing in on his draft prediction, wasn't he? So that does sound like something he'd say, whether in jest. Yeah, we were trying to cool our jets, weren't we? Because we were, you know, he did drop one yesterday, so just to try and sort of keep his feet on the ground. Maybe, you know,
he's
so good. I mean, there was an interesting conversation about what would be a good season for Dalton Kincaid. You know, we don't, you know, because if he gets a touchdown against the Jets, he's the next Travis Kelce, isn't he? Everyone is just going to go, that's it. You know, that's it. He's got the, you know, he's got Kelce's luck with the ladies and Gronk's, you know, off-field shenanigans. You know, he's. We're all going to be crowning, you know, putting the wreath around his neck, aren't we? You think Diggs is good? Diggs is still going to get his catches.
Yeah,
Davis looks good, but anyway, sticking to tight end. 17 games. 50, 60, 40.
I think 50
is a sort of round number, but you think that's only three catches a game.
I think
two catches a game is 34.
I think they've seen him in different formations. I mean, he's been solely running with the firsts. I mean,
he's
pressed quite a lot. He's been used in different positions. He's been used out wide. He's been used as a wide out. He's been used as a H-back, as a half-back. Yep. He's been set up as a full-back on there. He's one of those Swiss Army knives, let's put it that way. And I can see him being that safety net like Dawson Knox was. So I can see about 50 targets. I want to say about 600-700 yards.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling for about five touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the history on rookie tight ends since 1961.
Yeah.
And where's that list gone? There it is. Leading the list, the top, let's go to the top five on there. You've got Mike Ditka in 1961 for Chicago.
Yeah.
This was only 14 games, but 1,076 yards and 12 touchdowns. Then you had Kyle Pitts in 2021, 1,026 yards, only one receiving touchdown. Jeremy Shockey in 2002, in 15 games, 894 reception yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Jackson, number four, 1988 against Philadelphia, 869 yards and six touchdowns. And Charlie Young back in 73, again for Philadelphia in 14 games, 854 and six touchdowns. So there is, what do you call it, equivalents, and see how you can actually get up and up. But majority of them mainly were in your 600 to 500 range.
Yeah, I think that's asking a lot to get to 800-900 yards for a tight end as well. For a tight end as well, that, you know, he doesn't sound like he's blocking too well. No. Because he's still got that to learn, shall we say. That's give him a bit of slack. I think if he can get to four, I would even lowball it a bit, because I think he's going to be used in sort of short passing games more commonly. Although I have seen him play as a wide receiver. I think if you go 400-500 yards, if you can get to 40-50 targets or catches. Mm. I think that demonstrates a pretty strong return, and that may just be the difference that we need as well. We've still got Dick. If Davis can turn that promise around as well, then that'll be enough. And we've still got Dawson Knox, so if they can hook it up, and if Ken Dorsey can keep it going, and by all accounts he's trying some interesting things, we could really be a steamroller.
Yeah, I mean, the likes of Pitts, Shockey, and to an extent Ingram, they're later on, so we're talking like 90s onwards. The reason they're high has got to be because they were the number one go-to on that. I mean, last year, who did the Atlanta Falcons, 2021, who did the Atlanta Falcons really have as a wide receiver?
Calvin Ridley. True. Yeah.
And then he was suspended. It was that last year. But they didn't really have anything. Obviously, Jeremy Shockey in Carolina, they did have some decent ones, but he was more that safety net, that under the guy, in the middle of the field guy, who actually was getting yaks on there. I mean, Travis Kelce in his rookie season didn't really get onto this list. I mean, his rookie season, he actually got less than, well, this stat doesn't go as far back as, or goes only a certain way down after that. But, I mean, George Kittle had more on his rookie season. Jordan Reed, Pat Freiermuth had more. Zach Ertz had more. So it's interesting to see that how they work it out. I think with Pitts, it's that. But with Kincaid, it's going to be interesting. And hot shot, you may or may not know this, which Bills tight end, rookie tight end, since 1960, you know this, I'm testing your knowledge here, is the leading receiver, rookie tight end receiver.
Now, I do actually have an inkling on this, because I think this was on the Bills by the Numbers podcast with Chris Brown and Steve Tasker, and it was the guy in about the 1980 season, and I'm blanking on his name. It was something like Mark Mora or something like that from about the 80s. Well, not him. Who was it?
No, it is Ernie Warlick
in 1982.
482 yards and touchdowns.
That's not a bad target. That'll be interesting to put that stat up if he has a good first couple of games, makes a couple of catches.
Second was Tony Hunter in 1983.
Yeah.
402 and three touchdowns. Third was Paul Coster in 65 with 401 yards and no touchdowns. But bear in mind that these three, Warlick only had 14 games, Hunter 13 games, Coster 10 games. Dawson Knox is fourth on that list.
Oh, really?
388 yards and two touchdowns.
Oh, that is interesting, because he was always kind of criticised in his first few years. Well, he had too many drops, didn't he? But actually, that's not that bad. Almost 400 in his first year.
Yeah, so judging by what Kincaid has actually shown, and he's shown that he's built that rapport, and actually, and we've seen what he's done in college, you could actually see him actually breaking that record. And I'm going to put on record here right now at, 20 to 11 on Saturday, the 5th of August, 2023.
So,
Dalton Kincaid will break the record of the most receiving yards by a rookie tight end for the Buffalo Bills.
Love it. Yeah.
I timestamped it as well and all that. So if people don't know, they can come back to this episode.
Yeah.
And then wreak havoc for me. But I can see him doing that, especially with how McDermott wants this offense to play and what Ken Dorsey is actually doing with this, or trying to get this defense or this offense, to learn. I mean, as I say, I was reading Joe Buscaglia on The Athletic. This is what he described Kincaid as from watching him at in training camp. It's his footwork and how he stacks a defender to one side. His separations are immediately translatable to what the Bills were lacking at the time during the 2022 season. He does an excellent job at not giving up his intentions at the beginning of his route, using a long step to wall off his closest defender and possessing the burst out of his break and the change of direction skill to keep the defender guessing. Sounds awfully like what Stephon Diggs does.
Yeah. And speaking of Diggs and Davis, he's not going to be the fulcrum or the focal point of the offense. No. So he'll be picking up the scraps that, you know, when Diggs and Davis are covered.
He's going to get single coverage. He's not going to be.
And he's an unknown quantity.
Exactly.
There won't be a lot of film out on him. Funnily enough, he may have a brilliant year one, and then his year two may be more difficult because then the film's out there. And he's going to have to learn a bunch of new tricks. Because the first year's tricks will be known. But
he's good.
Yes,
he
could have that.
He's good when the defense is in zone. So if the defense are in zone, then that works to his strengths a lot more. So there's my big hot take there that he's gonna break the rookie record. I won't say how many yards he's going to get, but he's going to beat 483 yards in this up and coming season.
And awesome.
I think wide receiver is another place to look to now. I mean,
okay,
you've got Stephon Diggs out and out, not missed a step since going in, and all that off the field issues at the beginning of the off season, done and dusted.
Seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You see how many catches he's hauled in, looks fit as hell, looks making acrobatics, catching them one-handed. I've seen some of the clips. Yeah, he looks sharp as an attack, doesn't he?
Gabe Davis.
Yes.
I think he has now cemented that wide receiver too. I mean, yes, the Bills use him more for the long deep balls
on
there, but he started working more on his short intermediate routes, and up until the scrimmage game, he barely dropped a ball.
Yeah,
that chemistry between him and Allen seemed better in training camp than Allen to Diggs at the moment, as being reported.
He looks healthy as well. What we've seen of him, doesn't he? It's easy to say, oh, his ankle was bad last year, maybe it was, and you know, but he looks really sharp. He looks
So I think, as much as we worried about the production after Diggs, if Diggs went out, after seeing what training camp's going on, and even at the slot, Harty and Sherfield have been super impressive as well.
Yeah.
I'm putting it higher, or putting it lower, sorry, in my worries compared to the O-line.
Yes.
Still think it's kind of a worry. I mean, they brought in Andy Isabella mainly to do returns, but he's got 4.3 speed. he's actually shown up and had a few good practices in scrimmage, in practice scrimmages. He could be a dark horse on there, but Sherfield has been the most impressive out of all the new wide receivers that have come in.
Yep.
And even for Miami last year, he did well. I think he ended up with like 400 odd yards in that offense, and he was underrated. He was a go-to guy in there, and we've got weapons. We're going to have Diggs, Davis, Kincaid, Knox, James Cook, pretty much as your main pass catching weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they do get Cook out more in the passing game. So you can have a kind of feeling that the slot position is not going to have that many targets if you put Kincaid in as a slot, and even Diggs has worked some slots well. Mm-hmm. You put that in, so Sherfield and Harty, they're going to be a bit more healthier because they're not going to get that many more reps, and that makes them more dangerous and more fresh should anything happen and we need to service out Knox, Kincaid, or anyone for that time.
Yeah.
But I think Sherfield is one really that has really taken the bull by the horns.
Yeah, I think he'll be sneaky good, Sherfield. I mean, you forget that he was playing behind Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So to sort of say, okay, you're not going to get quite the many catches as those two gentlemen, you think, okay, well, that's pretty good company to be playing with there. For him to come in as that wide receiver three, yeah, he could really like hoover up the, you know, the I mean, I used the word scraps before, but you know, if Davis, Diggs are covered, if they're covering, Sherfield could end up getting a bunch. He could be that brilliant guy on you know, those third and fives, third and sixes that Cole Beasley was so good at as well. If it clicks, the Bills have an awful lot of weapons, don't they?
Yeah. I think
five or six really good players. They've got two very good wide receivers. They could have two very good tight ends. They could have James Cook as a decent pass-catching guy. And then they've still got Sherfield and Harty. And we haven't even mentioned Justin Shorter, the rookie who, you know, he's fighting for his place.
I think with Shorty, I think they're going to go, for the wide receiver room, Diggs, Davis, Harty, Shakir, Sherfield. I lost Sherfield. And we were just talking about him.
Yeah, I lost Shakir. I went straight to Shorter. God, that means Shorter's sixth wide receiver.
He probably, I think those five on game day will be the five that are going to be out there. They may drop one of them. They may drop Shakir at times if they use both Kincaid and Knox in their game plan. But Shorter has been doing a lot of special teams work. So he is, at the moment, we'll call him your Jake Kumerow.
Okay, he's in the Kumerow role, yeah.
So he's working with the special team as a gunner, but will be that serviceable. And has had moments in camp. So I think the six are probably set at the moment, which is Diggs, Davis, Harty, Sherfield, Shakir, and Shorter.
Yeah.
I think they're set, and I'm going to go into a couple under the radar players to watch a little bit later on, but James Cook is another one we've got to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's go to running backs because I think we're pretty much set for the wide receivers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James Cook, he's been
cooking.
Yeah, he's been cooking. but I think Ken Dorsey's even praised him that the way they've actually put him in different formations, actually worked certain plays on there, and even got him out in the passing game.
Yeah,
Dorsey's actually described him; he could become a true third, three down back.
Yeah.
And that's what we're needed. I think last year, this running back 1A, 1B with him and Singletary didn't help this offense. because you had two different type of running backs running an offense where you'd have to keep chopping and changing plays because Singletary is not the most speediest or elusive and wasn't amazing, let's put it that way, as at catching, whereas you've got James Cook who's the opposite of Singletary, but you're playing an offense where you were mixing and matching both of them all the time, making now James Cook, and I'll place it on record, he is running back one.
Yes.
There's no 1A, 1B about it. Now you've got him involved and you know what he can actually do, it's really going to be interesting to see how this offense takes that added X factor in there.
Yeah, because you mentioned he's like a three-down back. I can see James Cook coming on, well, certainly for first and second and getting it. But then if you've got like a third down and two, third down and three maybe, one, two, three, you know, the third and short-ish, you've still got James Cook. You've still got James Cook as a pass catcher, but then you've now potentially got Latavius Murray in that kind of, I like to call it the Frank Summers role. Anyone remembers Frank when he used Bills in the drought era? Frank used to come on at third and one, third and two, always got you those couple of yards. That was his job. You know, he didn't do much else, Frank, but he was great for that short yardage guy. He'd come in, he'd burst through the D-line, he'd get you those couple of yards, come what may. And you've almost got Latavius Murray. So you're absolutely right. James Cook can be used as three downs. But if you can get it where you've still got a running back on the field for three downs, you can bring Murray on as well. And then you've got so many more options because then you've still got potentially one tight end and a couple of receivers to throw to as well.
Don't rule out Damien Harris. I mean, he's been predominantly running back two for the whole offseason. He hasn't really sprinkled in with the first team because I think James Cook's pretty much been taking all the first team reps. But Damien Harris, he is going to be, I think he will be the number two on there. So I think he'll be more of your short yardage guy. He's got the burst. He's not an elusive player. He won't go out the tackles around. He's more of a between the tackles type player. But he's got that power to actually get those 1 or 2 yards. So I would, if I had to organize it, I'd say Cook, Harris, Murray. Really, that fourth running back, I think if anything, they're going to put Gilliam as it.
Yeah.
I think that fourth.
Obviously, because we all wish Nyheim Hines a speedy recovery, and we all hope he's okay. Horrible thing to happen. We hope he seems all right. He's just injured, but so hopefully he'll be back. But in a way, in the worst possible way, kind of resolved a bit of a headache they must have had there about how do you divvy up those running back reps. It kind of, if you can get Reggie to do some of the special teams and be the RB4, then that kind of means you don't have a cut decision to make, which you maybe would have had to have if Nyheim was still with us, playing, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, no disrespect. I mean, they're going to have Evans. If there is going to be a fourth running back kept on there, if they want to use Gilliam as a under the tight end moccasin, so say he can catch and he can play fullback, Darrington Evans probably has the best chance out of the remaining running backs to make that slot because he's been working predominantly on punt and kick returns.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jordan Mims has shown some good plays on there, but I think he's more practice squad candidate. So I think it depends on what they class Gilliam as. I know they love their fullbacks and they love what Gilliam Ashiem brings to this team. So I could see him being a lock on this roster, whether it be under the running back spot or the tight end spot. But Darrington Evans is probably the favorite at the moment to get that fourth running back spot. And as much as it doesn't mean much, he is a serviceable guy. He's a third round pick from the Titans back in 20 2020, and he is a pass catching running back.
Yeah,
and we know that they want to try and get the running backs catching a little bit more, so they've got someone that fits that offensive mantra. So he could be that sneaky fourth round pick, especially if they decide to give him the kickoff or punt return capabilities.
Yeah, it's kind of good that we're talking about running back four, isn't it? Because it seems even at this point, 5th of August, so much of the 53 is almost settled. Where there's a couple of things about, okay, what they're going to do CB2, what they're going to do at right guard, right tackle, kind of thing. But I think the main 53, there can't be many more than a couple really that are going in. It's just the order. Not whether they're in 53 or not.
It's not just the order. I think it's how the positionals itself, how many they're going to keep in each position. Because, I mean, we'll talk about the actual roster build, breakdown and build up in a future show before the cut day. But you've got to look also at defensive end. You've got about 11 or defensive line. You've got 11 or 12 players on there. We may get some shock cut or some shock trades from
maybe Boogie or Shaq or something like that. Yeah.
But the last thing I want to talk about, and I've actually written notes, I've been doing notes all week on the offense rate of the show, and
yeah,
I've got so much on this, and it's actually the playbook and the evolution we're potentially now going to see from Dorsey's first year to his second year.
Okay.
Because, what was it? Let's have a look. I did save a tweet, which is interesting, because everyone obviously said that he was different to, he didn't run enough, he didn't gain enough points as Dable. But where is it? Let's have a look. There, no, it's a little bit further down, a little bit earlier in the year. Right. Dable in 2021, his totals by the number, total points per game, 28.4. Total points, 483. Total touchdowns, 57. Yards per game, 397.1 yards per game. 398 first downs, 46.4% third down completion rate, 0-6 in one score games. Ken Dorsey last year, total points per game, higher, lower, or the same
as Dable? What was it in the Dable? I've already only remembered like
Dable
that.
Was 28.4.
I think points per game was more under Dorsey.
It was actually the same.
Oh, well, really? Exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
Okay. So total
points. Dable in 2021, 483. Dorsey, higher, same, or lower?
Higher. Higher than 481, you say?
Lower.
Lower. Okay.
Lower. 455.
Okay.
Total touchdowns. Dable, 57. Ken Dorsey, higher, lower, or the same?
I'm going to say higher.
Lower.
Lower, okay. I'm sensing a theme here.
53.
Oh, all right. It's only two less. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yards per game. Dable, 397.1. Ken Dorsey?
So I'm going to say lower, which means it's going to be higher. I'm going to say lower.
It is higher. 407.7.
Can I get every single one wrong? Okay, I got the first four wrong. Okay, go.
First downs, Dable, 398. Dorsey, higher, lower, or the same?
Higher.
Lower.
Yes, you know, I did actually think it was lower, so I said higher just so I could keep my losing run going. So that's five. Okay, come on, Robin. You got this.
Third. Third down percentage, Dable 46.4%. Dorsey higher, lower, or the same?
Lower.
Higher.
Yes.
50.2.
Yes.
50.2 third down percentage completion.
That's good. That's probably slightly surprising. I would not have. That's a decent improvement.
And including playoffs, one score games, Dable 0-6. You have to get this one right.
I think I am going to get this one right. I would be deliberately getting it wrong because you can't have less than zero, can you? Even if it was one, no. I'd say it was more because we won a bunch. I'm going to try and name the ones. So we beat the Browns by one score. We beat the Chiefs by one score. We beat the Ravens by one score. We beat the Dolphins by one score twice, if you include the playoffs. Yep. We beat, so that's five. Lions, 6. I don't think we did it with the Jets. We lost one to the Jets, but then we beat the Jets by one, so that's 7. Then we had the blowouts with like Green Bay and Pittsburgh and the Rams and Titans, so they won't count. Lost an hour on to the Dolphins, Ravens, back off the bye. Beat the Chiefs going to the bye. We had Lions. I think we beat the Patriots by more. Didn't count. Played the 7. 7 6. One score. 6.
Six and three.
Is that 6 regular season? Kind of
yeah, because obviously you got the Dolphins in the playoff.
Yeah, and Dolphins and regular season. Regular.
Yeah, you've got
Lions, Browns, Ravens.
Browns, Jets. Ravens, Vikings. Oh, no, we lost to the Vikings.
Jets. So I'm on 6.
Yeah, no, it's 6.
Right. Dolphins twice. 6. Jets, Lions, Browns,
Ravens. 6.
Bugger. 6. It was higher, though.
Unless you want to count... Yeah, Jets, yeah. I think, yeah, 6. No, 6
Jets.
And 3.
The Jets and Dolphins. Jets and Dolphins. Well, Jets and Dolphins twice. That's 3 times. Ravens, Browns, Chiefs.
No.
Beat the Chiefs by one
Chiefs
score.
Game. Oh, yeah, it was. So that's wrong, then. So it's actually... So,
7, including the playoffs.
Yeah. 1... 2, 3,
yeah,
four.
Because Chiefs, Ravens are the sort of two big teams. You've got Lions, yeah. Lions and Browns, which are sort of smaller teams, and then the AFC East, 2 Dolphins and 1 Jets.
There we go. So 7. 7-3, yeah. Or 7-2, whichever one. There's only 9 games, not a couple of 1 games. So his record and one score games are a lot better than Dable. Yeah.
Literally, if you know your arithmetic, it's infinitely better because if you can't multiply by 0.
But what I've been reading, and this is the bit I've actually been reading quite a lot in these training camps, how this offense is evolving. McDermott has actually put the emphasis, or wants to put the emphasis more on the runs after catch, so the racks on there. Last year, Mahomes racked up nearly 2,000 more yards, mainly due to yards, the reception, the run after the catch.
Okay.
So he's had Mahomes, majority of his came from after runs after the catch. Josh didn't seem to get that many runs after the catch. They had a couple of big plays on there, but majority of the wide receivers, they were either going short, intermediate, and then getting stopped or not trying to fight for some more. And what McDermott and trying to install into Dorsey is to get the yaks and the run after catch, whatever you want to call it, more involved, so we can actually spread the offense and actually make it easier for this offense so we don't get into a third and long type situation.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to how it works. I mean, they've even started doing screen game. They've even started
screen games. Yeah.
And had some really good success in it. And
yeah, it's been a few years, hasn't it? We haven't really had a decent screen game since, well, Chan Gailey era, have we? So,
I think, and what I've been reading, and what's good is that Dorsey is getting creative. I mean, some of the alignments they had when the Bills went into a 12 personnel, which is what 12 personnel is, a one running back, two tight ends. Two wide receivers. He's had Dawson Knox lined up in the backfield as the running back. He's had Kincaid as a back in the backfield as a H back fullback. They've had Kincaid as number three in a 3-by-1 and Knox as a solo tight end. They've actually bookended tackles to create a seven man offensive line for the run games. They've had Knox as the Y, Kincaid actually just off of him. So they've got both tight ends pretty much right next to each other. He's done a lot of shifts, a lot of motions.
I've seen that as well. Lots of motion. Yeah.
And they've lined Knox and Kincaid anywhere. That's anywhere. And what I meant by with seven-man surfaces is both the tight ends are actually attached to the O-line. So in essence, you know, you get the jumbo sets when they bring up, when they actually bring in the extra tackle, especially short yardage games, called jumbo set, pretty much that's what a seven-man surface is. And then obviously, but also, I'm trying to write down the notes, what else I wrote down, the 1-1 personnel, so the 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers. They have, when I said Knox is number three, they had him, or Kincaid's number three, they had him at the third wide receiver. And what they've done on some of those personnel, so they made it look like a 12 personnel, but it's actually 11, with Kincaid being that third wide receiver. And they've had
because you could motion Kincaid out, couldn't you?
You could, yeah. And they had him. And this is one of the plays, they had him as number three on the trip side. So they had the three wide receivers on one side, Dawson Knox on his own the other side.
Yeah.
So then you can motion and all that. So he's getting very creative. And this is what I think we want to see as an offense. I mean, he's had even had one play where Gabe Davis was lining up behind Josh. So you had a wide receiver playing as a pretty much in a running back position. You had with Cook split out wide and Gilliam as the fullback.
Yeah.
And you've had, so they even had Gabe Davis come in as tight lineman. So had him on pretty much like a tight end, pretty much close to that offensive line, especially for the run game, because Gabe Davis is probably our best blocker. But it's just interesting to see how he's actually doing this and how he's really trying to get this play, how to get this offense motoring. Because we were so used to the predictable pass, pass, run, or run, pass, 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 run, pass. Not really. And you knew who was going to majority of the time with the targets. Diggs. Davis, Diggs, Knox, Davis, then Beasley for a bit coming in. But now, with all these weapons, you can see they're interlinking now. And I think they've had, and I say, I'm going through all the ways that he's actually been, Dorsey's been creative. He's had, Reggie Gilliam lined out as a wide receiver next to Trent Sherfield. He's had Diggs and Shakir both in double slot in the slots. He's actually had Gilliam and Harris in the backfield, Knox in motion with Davis, Shakir, and Sherfield. He had double tight ends with Davis, Shakir, and Sherfield. And really showing quite a lot of different formations and different motions. And also the 2-2 personnel, they've used that quite a lot, which the 2-2 personnel
22. Is
two running backs, two tight ends.
Well, yeah, I asked you about that a couple of episodes ago about whether they would use that, because if you're opening the door to 12, 22 just seems like that's just another way you can run it, especially if we have two decent running backs, which seems like we do. That seems a really good idea, especially in those short yardage situations as well. Two tight ends, two running backs, and you only need a couple of yards.
This is why Kincaid, as I said earlier, it'd probably break the rookie record, because you can use him as a wide receiver. You can use him in that in the 22 personnel on there, because you'll have Harris runner. You can have Cook as a runner or a pass catcher. You've got Knox, you've got Kincaid, and throw in there Stephon Diggs. You've got guys that really are going to make that defense really think a lot more. And I mean, I've only got stats up to 2021. I need to find stats for 2022, but this is under Brian Daboll's last season as a Bills offensive coordinator. The most runned play or personnel group was the three wide receivers, so 11 personnel, which was run 75% of the time.
Yeah, it was. That chimes.
The 22 personnel was only run 1% of all Bills' offensive plays was in the 22 personnel, and only 8% was in the 12 personnel. So now you can see what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. You're getting a lot more looks and look trying to make this team more difficult.
Multivariate.
And it's not just that. I think they've started doing a lot more pin and pulls. And I said last season, pin and pulls was a staple of how Aaron Cromer likes to get his offensive line to actually get out.
I do remember saying that.
They've done this even with tackles. They even had tackles come out and pull. So this is going to be an interesting season. I want to see how it goes in preseason and in the season, how maybe we'll find what our true identity is, and we're actually going to see an offense that really can stay on the field a lot longer than what we're used to. Because I think last year we kept the ball quite well. We ran down the clock, took out clock, but there were times where we were going three and out in short, quick succession.
Each time, too many deep balls.
And you knew once the personnel came out, you knew where they were going, who they were going to. So it was easy for the defense to then cover up. But now you've got Kincaid, you've got Cook coming out. You've got more options, and that's really going to make the defense think a lot more.
Yeah.
And one last thing I did say I was going to do.
Okay.
I know we've been talking quite a lot, and most people at home now are thinking, what the hell are they going on about? Is my under the radar watch list. Now, I did it last week.
Yeah.
Who did I choose? I think I went with Shane Ray, didn't I? Shane Ray and someone else. Did I go two or did I just go one? I don't know. But this time, it's two wide receivers. Both of them more like going to be practice squad guys. But two guys, especially one of them that's actually been quite productive. He's been limited reps, okay, mainly with the third team. Has actually been really, has stood out and actually shown a lot of promise.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Isaiah Coulter.
Oh, okay.
A fifth round pick in the 2020 draft out of Rhode Island. He was drafted by the Texans. Now, he hasn't really had a catch or anything like that. He's not really done anything in the NFL yet. He's mainly been on the practice squad or injured.
Yeah.
But he was signed to the Bills practice squad back in 2022, was signed by the Cardinals practice squad, released 3 days later, then came back to the Bills. But what I've seen and what I've heard is that he is making quite an impression and someone that could be molded. I mean, he's sunk his hips. He's sinking his hips well in the breaks. He's creating separation. He's got decent pace on him. I think he's got a four-four wide receiver. Good vertical jump, broad jump, and the split times, I think, would have been up there. But he's got this ability, to actually to separate. I think he could be an Isaiah Hodgins of this team.
Yeah.
I think you'll hear his name.
He'll make a few catches for another team.
Yeah, you'll hear his name probably quite a bit in this in preseason, especially in the later games.
Yeah.
So like the second and third games. But another name to watch out for, and this guy, he's undrafted this year. He's what, 6'5", 6'6".
Yeah.
He's Tyrell Shavers.
Okay.
He was someone I liked coming out of college. He was from San Diego State, started his career at Alabama, then went to transfer to Mississippi State, then San Diego State. For pretty much not the fastest guy on there, but he's got the ability to get up and grab, and he's actually shown quite well in camp, and he's been a special teams player.
Mm-hmm.
So he is someone that you could see battle shorter for that last place.
Yeah.
Because he played special teams as well as obviously being the out and out, one of the out and out wide receivers in his college career. So he could be fighting shorter for that sixth spot.
Yeah. But
don't underestimate him. The fact that he's playing special teams. So those two are really my under the radar to watch.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely remind you of it if either one of those two make the team.
Yeah.
They make it onto the 53. The credit is all yours, Matt. I think they're probably training camp competition.
Yeah.
To see who do, but yeah, good luck to them if they can make it.
I'd like to see him go through his practice squad. They'd definitely be. I'm hoping they'll be put on the Bills practice squad. I know they're there, but I think Coulter, I need to just go back. I'm going to speak to a couple of guys that have been there and see if he actually has played special teams. Because if he's played special teams, Coulter, then he could potentially push again, make that three-way what you call it, battle for that sixth spot.
Yeah.
But this is where the depth comes in. I mean, after those six...
Depth of wide receiver six is a damn good place for this roster to be, isn't it?
Yeah. So you've got Isabella, an actual draft pick who actually had a spot. You've had Keyshawn Johnson, who's had a decent training camp so far. Desmond Patton, Terrell Shavers, Justin Shorter, Brian Thompson. You've got five or six guys there that could really make, as well as Coulter, Marcel Altman as well, that could make that sixth spot. So it's going to be an open competition for sure, but it's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So that is our look so far on the offensive side. We're going to do a lot more work coming on. We've obviously got the three preseason games. I have a few guests lined up. Some of them are ex-players. Some of them obviously are beat reporters. One thing I want to say out there, and I'll put this on the podcast Twitter and the UK Bills Twitter, is that we partnered this year with the Full 10 Yards, and they are creating a season guide. They do it every year. They're doing a season guide, which actually have obviously review of the season, preview of the season, and all that. Price is £7.50 for a digital and physical copy. 108 pages packed with teams, divisions, league previews, reviews, and tips. And if you go to their website, and I say I'll put the link up there, it's full10yards.co.uk. I'll put the link on the Twitter page. If you go on there, order, and put in the code BILLS6, you get £1.50 off. So you get the guide for £6 rather than £7.50, and the Full 10 Yards. Give them a follow as well, because they do have some good stuff. And this is what the NFL UK is about. We've got people like the Full 10 Yards. We've got the Touchdown. We've got all these other NFL UK-based groups are really out there to give you all the guides, tips, hints, and just be your mouthpiece, as well as obviously us as a podcast. So check them out. Check the link when I post it up. BILLS6 for the 10% off. Get a season guide for £6. So if there are anything else you want to add, Robin, before we close up?
No, you stole the Coulter works right out of my mouth. You thieving swine. I can't wait. We've done the Highmark Stadium, we've done the pads, we've done Hall of Fame game. I think next step, Colts game next Saturday. Can't wait. It's not really a game, but they're keeping score, so I'll call it that. Week one's another step closer.
It'll be interesting to see how vanilla this offense is going to be.
They aren't doing shit in that. They are just going to hand that ball off and, you know, couple of curls, couple of hitches.
I'd rather a vanilla offense for the preseason. I'm not going to moan at all about the offense if we struggle on offense. I'd rather let that go like that and have it as a vanilla offense, so no one knows what we're planning.
Vanilla offense, base defense, no look or notions. No.
If we do, then we'll just call Bella. We'll call Spygate and Bella check on them.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what the starting O-line is of the Bills. It'd be interesting to see if they do any, you know, really dreadful foul ups. But if they're at least organized, half decent, then I'll take that as a win. That's about all you can seriously measure. We haven't actually lost a preseason game in about three or four seasons, have we?
No.
Not that they really matter that much. We're actually unbeaten since about the 2020 season. I think we went unbeaten in 2020 as well. So, which is always good. So it'd be interesting. I think O-line. Interesting to see how the O-line get on, who's the starting, and then just who rotates out.
Yeah, I think we'll get an idea, because obviously we know the starters, especially for the Colts game, are really going to play like two series and then that's it. So
we might get
an idea from that first game who they actually have pegged as the starting five. And even the starting cornerback two and middle linebacker. So that is going to give us clues on there, but we'll wait and see till week one. So obviously for everyone, keep following us on all the socials, on my social, on Rob's social, on Mark's socials, UK_Bills, at RWBB_podcast, where I'll post the link to get the season guide from the Full 10 Yards. And from the both of us, it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
You don't know anything about heart? You know anything about work? Huh? That's who we are. Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.